We head out to the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline, NFL.com, Cleveland's own. This is a good guy right here. Nick Shook, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, fellas? Happy last day of an amazing wild card weekend. I don't know. It's no holiday. It's playoff time, baby.
I don't know, dude. That whole weekend felt like a hot. That was so awesome. Is that because really the only letdown was just the quality of the Patriots-Chargers game? Was that as good of a wild card round as you can remember?
Yes, and unfortunately it happens a couple years after they swiped the super tag from Super Wild Card Weekend, because it defines Super Wild Card Weekend.
Mm. What do you think the difference is between Super Wild Card Weekend and, you know, regular old Wild Card Weekend?
Branding and realizing that it's a mouthful just because you expanded the playoffs by a couple of teams. You know, you add super to it now. We're all adjusted. It's just back to wild card.
What about mega wild card weekend?
Mega super.
Let's take it to 18 teams. Let's put more than half the league in. Then it can be mega super fun wild card weekend.
Browns would have a chance to make it then. All right. Let's go back to this part here. I have surmised, this is how I'm going to treat it until something changes, that John Harbaugh is using the Browns amongst other teams as maybe leverage in his quest to get the job he wants. Do you agree with that mentality?
Yeah, I think that the entire Harbaugh experience is going to be nothing more than a bidding war, and that he'll have his, you know, pick of the litter, depending on, you know, you got to have a little bit of agreement between, you know, ownership, franchise leadership. There's, you know, it's been floated that he wants his own GM, which I think a coach of his stature, that makes complete sense. But yeah, I think what you're going to get is a lot of reports, maybe some conflicting, that are floated out there that he's interested in this team, and then this team's interested in him, and this team wants to make a huge offer to him, and that sort of thing. And it's all in the name of one effort, which is to drive up the price for the coach. And ultimately, I hate to say it, but just looking at, you know, different team situations, I don't think the Browns would be in the top three on his priority list, but I could be wrong.
All right, so if not McCarthy, how does this shake out for the Browns? Is it McDaniel, or is it one of these young guys like Grant Yudinski or Dan Pitcher?
Yeah, so I thought Zach Jackson put out something that was really interesting about Dan Pitcher's association with the Browns, those who are in charge with the Browns, and the history, you know, the connection between them. Because a lot of the times that these coaches are hired, it's a big league, but it's a small world, as you guys know. And it really comes down to, who do you know? Who have you worked with in the past? Who do you align with? So I think a guy like Pitcher could be a legitimate candidate. I know that wouldn't get Browns fans excited, because I know Browns fans are hoping for some crazy combination of Robert Saleh as the head coach and Mike McDaniel as his OC, and you just bring over the Shanahan tree minus Shanahan. But don't be surprised if it ends up being a name that is not as attractive in the headline. It's tough to judge for the Browns as opposed to some other teams, because what do they lack that other teams have? And I know this will spark a whole other conversation with you guys, which I'm happy to get into. But the Titans have Cam Ward. The Giants have Jackson Dart. Two quarterbacks that each franchise believes can be their franchise quarterback. The Browns have Shedeur Sanders. We know the whole discourse on there. It is not as rock solid as those other situations are perceived to be. And there's also these potential, you know, pieces that could still move. What with the Packers, you know, losing to the Bears in the fashion that they did, and Matt LaFleur, but, you know, that involvement, you could continue to go down the list, even with the lack of, you know, Greg Roman potentially being out as an offensive coordinator. Do the Eagles, do they move on from Nick Sirianni and Kevin Petullo? Is it a staff change situation again, like it was a couple of years ago, or are bigger changes coming? There are still pieces that could move, that could change the landscape of this and make it into one of the spicier coaching carousels that we've seen in a while. So I think all options are on the table, but for the Browns situation, what you have is a very good defense coordinated by a defensive coordinator who should probably also get looks as a head coach. He's only been a head coach once, and if we're talking other retreads, why not include Jim Schwartz in the mix? But you have an offense that needs a lot of work. You have an existing general manager that the Browns have already backed. And unless they pull a Liam Cohen power move and get the GM kicked out of there for him to go take the job, it makes it a little less, I don't know if it's attractive is the word, as much as possible for every candidate to be potentially on board, because they do have to mesh with the existing GM. So there's a few hurdles that the Browns are going to have to clear that maybe some other teams don't have. And I think that ends up leaving a lot of our options open, including some lesser known names.
It is Mike McDaniel Day today for the Browns. They've actually put out that they've conducted an interview with Mike McDaniel. Would Mike McDaniel be a downgrade from Kevin Stefanski?
It's interesting. I think offensive creativity-wise, no. Browns fans might like to see what he could do with this offense, but it's hard to compare between his time in Miami and potential time with the Browns because who the Dolphins had, you know, as weapons. Now, they never had a great offensive line. They had an okay offensive line. They had two at quarterback, but they had legitimate weapons outside. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, you know, you got Devon Achane. And they were able to do some really fun creative things, especially when they were at the peak of their powers. And as any Browns fan will happily admit, the Browns lacked those weapons. Not at running back necessarily, but they definitely lack it at receiver. So it might take on a bit of a different appearance if he were to be the head coach. And there's also, you kind of look at the way that the Dolphins, his tenure, you know, it eventually ended. It's almost, I don't know if it's because of his personality or what, but there wasn't necessarily the strongest sense of leadership being exuded there. Now, I think the rift with Tua had a lot to do with that. Tua just calling out teammates for not showing up to players-only meetings, being very candid with reporters, seemed to demonstrate a lack of, you know, maybe control on the part of the head coach. So it would be different from the Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry robotic era, where they just give you the most PR coached responses publicly. They never really, you know, give you too much insight into what's really going on, and they keep everything close to the vest. But I don't think on the field it would be a downgrade. I think it would be comparable. It would look different. It would open the avenues to different styles of offense than what the Browns have run. And then it just comes down to fit. But I don't think in total it's a downgrade. It might just look like it.
Are the Browns going to lose Jim Schwartz?
That all depends on who they hire as head coach, right? I think that there's a good chance that they are willing to sacrifice him in order to get the head coach that they want. So if I had to lean one direction or the other, I would say yes, because it's really hard to convince a new head coach to come in and say, oh, but by the way, you have to keep this defensive coordinator. If they're willing to do that, that's one thing. But if they come in and they're told they have to keep that guy, I think that's going to eliminate some candidates. And if that eliminates the Browns, you know, most desired candidates, then yeah, I think that he would end up being sacrificed in order to hire the right guy. It's just it's another hurdle that you're creating to hire the guy that you necessarily want to hire that you could eliminate if you said, all right, we're willing to part with him if you want to come in as a new coach and get your own staff. And because again, like I said, the NFL, big world, but it's all about who you know. It's all about who you trust, who you've coached with before. And oftentimes when coaches come in, they want to fill their own staff out.
Yeah, the problem is I'm not getting rid of Jim Schwartz for Dan freaking Pitcher. Right?
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But what do you value more? Like, are you trying to create some happy partnership where I value my defensive coordinator so much that he's not good enough to be my head coach, but he's good enough to still be my defensive coordinator with a head coach that a lot of people maybe have never heard of or maybe aren't excited to bring in just because he's an offensive mind? Like, you're trying to create this happy little perfect marriage, and I don't know if that necessarily exists. It's just not as simple as that. So if it comes down to that where you're like, I need to have Jim Schwartz on my staff no matter what, then he's going to end up being your head coach.
Yeah, Nick, I know it seems really hard to answer this question, so if you just want to be like, I don't have a great answer for this, I'll completely understand. But when it comes to this offseason, we don't even have our head coach yet. We don't know who the quarterback is going to be. But how aggressive do you feel like Andrew Berry is going to have to be in order to get these things at least turned around in a 3-4-5 win advantage from last year this offseason?
I mean, that's a fantastic question. We have to start with the finances, right? I mean, let's look at the Browns going into 2026. As it stands right now, according to Over the Cap, they are $15 million in the red. Now, that's not a big total. There's been off seasons in which the Saints were $80 million in the red, and they extended some guys, restructured. I think only two of the 10 guys that I thought they were going to move on from that year ended up leaving. One retired, one got traded somewhere else. They kept the key guys on their team. But the problem with the Browns is they have a lot of non-active cap charges against them. We have, you know, according to this site, that Dalvin Tomlinson, $12.1 million. Juan Thornhill, $5.6 million. And the numbers continue because if you look at the cap going into 2026, you got guys who are on void years with massive cap numbers. You got Wyatt Teller, $10.3 million. Joel Bitonio, $23.5 million, which he may retire. We'll find out with that. David Njoku, $24.3 million. These are their cap numbers going into next year to not even be on the team, because of the way Berry has been aggressive to try to keep this team competitive and stay in the winning window that really hasn't existed with them. Nobody has loved tacking on void years in the NFL more than Andrew Berry. And that all goes back to the Watson deal. They restructure Watson annually by adding on void years to create immediate cap space to be able to add players of quality. And they can do that again. It's just that eventually the mountain starts to pile up and you have to kind of take a reset year or two. they don't have the time. They don't have the leash to do that. So I would expect that he approaches it in a similar fashion. It's just that the margin, you're working with less and less every year, and it's going to be very challenging. And you also have to try to figure out how to convince guys to come play for a team that has a very good defense. May not have its defensive coordinator. We'll find out with who they hire. And also as an offense, that was one of the lowest ceiling operations in the NFL last year. So there's a lot of work left to be done. And I caution Browns fans to stop or at least avoid creating some sort of free agent wish list this year, because they're just not operating with the same amount of financial power, at least as it stands right now, as some other teams are.
All right, Nick, you texted me late last week that you have a final conclusion on Shador's rookie season, which may or may not include a compromise for entering 2026.
You ready for it?
I don't know because there's as much of a chance you're going to annoy me as you are going to make me go like, hey, I think we can work with this.
It would be a real turn if Nick was like, I'm going to come on and say something nice and then didn't.
I'm not a heel. Come on now. Okay, so I will say this first. I think you guys are among the more optimistic and positive-leaning pairs in Cleveland media when it comes to Shador. And I give you credit for that, because it's hard to stay optimistic in Cleveland when it comes to the Browns. So good for you on that. I, after reviewing everything and watching every snap of every play, or every play of every game this season, I've come to accept that the most realistic outcome for his career, and this is going to upset a lot of people, is a plus version of Jacoby Brissett. That is what I could absolutely see happening in his career. Okay. That means that you are a reliable quarterback who is going to pilot an offense consistently. Let's look at Arizona. They went to Jacoby because they couldn't trust Kyler Murray to actually convert third downs, and their offense got better with him this year. Now, granted, they lost most of those games that he played, but that was a sign of respect and appreciation for Jacoby. Shador could be that, but better, plus version of that. That means that you're getting a chance to compete for one or two starting jobs in the NFL, and at minimum, you have a guaranteed long-term career as a valued backup that a lot of teams are always going to be interested in from one offseason to the next. Now, that is my realistic outcome. Could it be better? Yes. If the situation around him gets better, yes. But I think that we should all kind of understand that he has earned the right to compete for the starting job in 2026. He got incrementally better from week to week. He became more valuable as a scrambler. He'd still put some awful sacks because he hangs onto the ball too long, which is very typical of rookie quarterbacks. His offensive line wasn't great, but it also wasn't quite as bad as folks might want to point out in defense of him. He did disappear for significant stretches and didn't help them in key spots, but he finished strong, and he ultimately proved that he deserves more time with his team and the opportunity to compete for a starting job. A lot of that will have to do with the coach that they hire and what they want to do with the position. I expect them to bring in a veteran competitor. That would just be the prudent decision on their part. But it's not – he wasn't terrible. He wasn't great. And you can carve out a long career by being a Jacoby Brissett, who people in Cleveland really loved that one year, and other teams continue to love to employ and turn to in times of need.
Well, I guess I was wrong. I guess you really can't tell if you're going to say something nice and then
roll
that out.
When you see the video on this, he did roll his eyes.
And roll that. I mean, that was not the compliment you think it is. That's like somebody coming up and be like, hey, you're not as ugly as I thought you are. What? Well intentioned.
That's the guaranteed outcome. I said he could be better than that. That's just where I see it.
Well intentioned thought by you, but it was not very nice. The end of it is not very nice.
I'm sorry. We can't all be as aspirational, you know?
That's all right.
I will say, I think you did give us the compromise, which is he will battle for the starting job this year, which I think makes a lot of sense. I can at least go there. I've said I think the better version of him is some cross between Geno Smith and Kirk Cousins. JP,
that's not very far off. That's the higher end of the ceiling that I see as well.
And I said Trevor Lawrence.
Not that far. He's not going to be that guy. But I could totally see a Geno type of
right situation, right spot. You get some good skill position players around him. Good coach. You know what I'm talking about. It's amazing though. I mean, he had nothing. Absolutely nothing, Nick, to work with.
I mean, I've seen worse.
You've seen worse?
Geno went through it. Yes, what Geno went through in Vegas this year was markedly worse than what the Browns had.
Absolutely. Really? I mean, we had the worst graded offensive line. There's not a receiving core that is worse. They at least had Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers alone tilted in the Raider scale.
Brock Bowers was injured early in the season, and by the time he came back, it was the middle to the latter portion of the season, and he wasn't able to carry them from there.
Ashton Gentry and Brock Bowers is better than Quinshon and then Harold Fannin
and
whatever
else. How dare you?
Not when you're playing behind the worst offensive line in the NFL, and I know the grades skew toward the Browns, but I'm telling you right now, having watched all these games for both teams, nobody had a worse offensive line in the NFL than the Raiders this season.
We got a Shadur off right now.
We
guys.
Got a PFF off too. I'll tell you what the PFF grades say. Okay,
well, right. I have full respect for PFF. I appreciate those folks very much. But like I said, I've watched every play of every game in the NFL this year.
Oh, yeah, I watched Cam Robinson and KT Levinston. Okay.
Hey, I'm not a fan of Levinston.
You can't tell me the Raiders. You can't tell me the Raiders have a lot worse than KT Levinson and Cam Robinson on a consistent basis.
Well, you need to go look at Forsyth and Glaze.
Luke Whipler, Cam Robinson, KT Levinston, and Tevin Jenkins were all on the same offensive line together at the same time. You can't tell me the Raiders were worse.
I promise you they were. I say that as confidently as possible.
This is like Roman Greco wrestling back in the gladiator days, except both guys end up mildly excited.
You see what happened, though. Gino wasn't able to do anything, though. But I think this is a good case study for you, Nick, though. Because Gino wasn't able...
Nick? We're both Nick.
Nick Shook.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Because Gino at one point has been good in the NFL. We've seen him be good. He was good in Seattle. He lit it up in Seattle. And then you move him to the Raiders with... And we argued who's got the worst offensive line. Let's just agree, trash was trash. And then Gino looked awful this year. He was unplayable this year. And that kind of speaks to the idea that Shador didn't have much of a chance. If Gino was good in his NFL career, good enough to get $100 million salaries, all of a sudden looks like trash. Can't imagine what a rookie in seven games would look like. Oh, wait, I can. It was Shador this last year.
That's fair, but I don't think that Gino was necessarily unplayable. I think he was a victim of the circumstances. And I'm not
that's what I'm saying about Shador.
About Sanders. But what I'm saying is that Gino still threw for 3,000 yards, and there were games in which he'd randomly throw for 300 yards and try to keep them competitive, but he would...
And Shador had a game where he threw for 364 yards and randomly kept the Browns competitive. What do you do? It's the same thing.
It's similar, but I'm telling you right now, the argument with Gino is that there's nothing he could have done.
That's the argument for Shador right here, too.
Let's think about strengths and weaknesses, though. Gino is a guy who, with time, will try to fit passes into small windows, usually does it on time, makes proper reads, gets the ball out on time. He tried that this year with this team, rarely had time to throw, ended up throwing a career-high 17 interceptions, still threw 19 touchdowns, got banged up throughout the year. And just on the eye test alone, Gino and Shador, not the same, but I actually kind of like the comparison overall. And it's fair to say, okay, Shador wasn't put in the best situation, and he was a rookie who came in behind a bad offensive line. But ultimately, between the two, I don't think they're as comparable as you might think.
All right. You're a very reasonable human, I'll give you that.
All right. I tell you guys to hug it out, but you might end up sword fighting. Nick, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Nick. That was very reasonable by you.
Yep, as always. Love you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, buddy. Nick Shook there, NFL.com on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Spicy.
Not spicy.
Oh,
very reasonable.
We had a nerd off, and I love it.
Very reasonable. I'm
proud of both my boys there. You guys, that was some high-level jousting.
It's fun to joust with him.
Ooh.
Although, I just keep thinking, I'm going to the bathroom with Nick. Yeah, we're going to do a sword fight here? No, I'm going to the bathroom, Nick. That's all I can think about.
But just think about crossing streams.
I was like,
react to Nick. That was he was talking about me, Nick, not Nick Shook.
No, not Nick Shook. No.
No sword fighting there, except on air.